I just feel like I let myself down in that kind of opportunity, and you know, feel like I let some fans down in that kind of situation. And
obviously, I'm very disappointed and upset, but I don't feel too negative towards it. I mean, 353 is not in a result that's terrible.
Yeah, nah, disappointing, and need to. I don't know. Would like to. Would do it differently if I could do it again.
Maybe overstressed myself a little bit, and I could have. You know, I'd love to run that race again and do it differently. But you obviously you get one opportunity for that, and unfortunately, didn't go that well for me.
Someone is probably losing their job. I don't know, like whoever was. He's done it at 16. In his first ever indoor race.
Yeah, first time ever on an indoor track.
This guy has been trained as a robot since he was 12 years old. And then he does a performance like that. It really calls into question everything that you thought you believed in.
Ollie?
No,
fucking crazy.
The fact that a 16-year-old can win the Olympic gold means it's not a real sport. Now what does this say about running?
It was insane.
Jason was making us avoid. Jason was making us avoid the gym because a certain someone was coughing up a lung in the gym constantly.
That's true, actually.
So he said, don't go in there and get sick, just run outside. So we
find out more on the Coffee Club podcast.
Okay. Like and subscribe.
Coffee Club, Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Coffee Cup podcast for episode 217. Today, George and I are in the studio, and Ollie is in it's actually a quite familiar setting now. He's in his room, got the beautiful Aussie singlets behind him, back in Australia. Ollie, how are we doing?
How did you get there so quickly?
I know. We got express transport now because I've been traveling back so much. But I forget that my dad made those framed jerseys. I forget that they're always in the background.
They look beautiful.
They're pretty sick.
Yeah, he's done a good job with them.
If I have a kid that makes the Australian team, I'll probably do that for them as well, to be honest.
Yeah, he says he wants me to take it home, take it to America. And I was like, I don't think they would make it. probably get
it.
Damaged. But,
Today we have so much exciting stuff to talk about because we're coming off the Millrose Games, one of the highlights of the American indoor track season, or the highlight, you could say. Before we get into that, there are a couple other newsy type topics that we're just going to roll through because it's some exciting stuff. First off, big news hot off the press. The half marathon world record by Jacob Kiplimo, 56:40 something bananas, was not officially ratified. And it's crazy I didn't think this would actually happen. I think a lot of people will remember back when it did happen. It was the most mind-blowing run of all time. And then we saw the videos of it and we saw that he was very close to the pace car for a lot of the race. And there was a lot of chatter about it. I didn't expect it to actually be the reason that it didn't get ratified.
I never knew that, like, pending ratification, like, they're actually doing shit in the background, it turns out.
I think it was the first time they've done something.
I wonder what other records have ever not been ratified. We should have looked that up right before.
Bet you that this is the first time ever a record's been not ratified for this reason.
Yeah.
For the pace car.
Where did he do it?
Barcelona.
Okay, it was Barcelona. It feels like a long time ago.
It was, I think it's in April.
So almost a year ago, basically.
I think so. Yeah, that's a long time to decide whether the car was too far away or not. But someone is probably losing their job. I don't know, like whoever was decided to have the car that close to him because it's crazy for him to lose that performance. But at the same time, I guess it is warranted because without a doubt, especially at those speeds that he's running, if you see 100%. How close the car is, it's a massive wind block. And I mean, there's many reasons why world records are so hard to do. And one of them is because no one else can physically run that pace. So you have to do a lot of the work on your own. And especially, I think it's dicey in the roads world because every road race, I mean, it's true every race, but every road race wants to have the world record run there. So then if
they want to push the boundaries,
if they can start influencing that, then that gets into a big no-no area. So
yeah, when he's running the tree, wasn't like 240s basically, 245s or something.
Yeah, something crazy.
Like when you're going that fast, the air resistance like has such a big impact compared to even marathon pace or any other any other distance, really. I mean, I guess all road records, but yeah. That is crazy. I still think he could probably do it. He still seems like good enough to break that record. He seems like he's made for the half marathon, but he's going to have to go do it again. So now the world record is still...
back to Yarmouth.
Kijelsha, somewhere else. It's still ridiculous. It's still like 57:30, isn't it?
Yeah, probably from Valencia, I want to say. I'm not sure about that, but yeah. So he'll have to go to... Kiplimo will now have to go to Valencia in between some of his marathons that he's running and try to get it done there. But yeah, it's just... I mean, it's... I think it was really unexpected news for everyone because it wasn't something that was on people's minds, and then it just popped out of nowhere. But yeah, crazy to actually see something like that happen, because I thought for sure like that was a world record that was going to stand and never, ever, ever get broken. So kind of bananas to see it play out like that. But the other kind of big news was what went down at BU this past weekend. And most notably, I think you could say, was Sam Ruth, the Truth. Shout out to Jan for the nickname. So this 16-year-old from New Zealand, from down under. Wait, is New Zealand count as down under, or is that just Australia?
I think it counts.
Yeah. Runs a 3:48 mile to win in a very solid field, running the fastest time ever by someone that age by a very large margin. I think the next fastest is Jakob at 3:56, running, I guess, a New Zealand record. Isn't it kind of crazy that last week you mentioned how New Zealand count indoor records as outdoor records?
Yeah. I now want to know if I was like, if that was true or not. It does seem like it, like the, based on the post, I think I was right to say that, because it seems like they're just counting it.
Yeah. Because everyone said he broke
John Walker's record. Yeah.
Exactly.
Which is crazy that they'll say that. But it was ridiculous. I know. It seems like we have been maybe a little quiet on the Sam the Truth news. But wait, no, we talked about it last week.
About the mile, and we mentioned his 800.
Yeah, true. The 1:45, and it turns out the conditions must have been pretty bad.
Yeah.
For that last mile, we were kind of questioning.
Well, a 3:53 outdoor mile is about a 3:48 at BU. I think that's a fair conversion.
He made it look like very comfortable too. Insane splits, like so consistent. Not a single 200 split over 30 seconds. Like, not even a crazy close. He just, like, was running fast the whole way. He just slowed down the least compared to getting some nice help from Peter Sisk, who broke the Belgian record.
Strong run from him.
He had a tough last lap, comparatively. Then a 16-year-old is running 3:48. Taking over Cam Meyer's most pointless stat ever, fastest mile ever in January.
Oh, yeah. Week
on the 31st of January.
I didn't put that together.
Most pointless stat ever. But he takes the crown.
Yeah, kudos to him. Ollie, what do we make of 16-year-olds running so fast, and in particular being from New Zealand out of all places?
Yeah, I think it's all the lamb. They're eating too much lamb down there, making them too powerful. We're going to have to cut off the lamb and monitor their performances. I mean, it's pretty insane. 16 years old. I don't think I could like dress myself at 16, let alone run a 3:48 mile.
I couldn't run a 3:48 fucking 1500.
That's not just a good 1500 at that age. That's a really good 1500 at that age.
If you can run 3:48 in the 1500 at 16, like, you got a bright future.
You're getting to college, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, you're getting recruited. Like, you could probably go to like any school in the country.
Dude, shit like this makes me so... Dude, this is like... This is why I've been able to disregard swimming my whole life. I've always said with swimming, the fact that a 16-year-old can win the Olympic gold means it's not a real sport. Now, what does this say about running? You know what I mean? That a 16-year-old can come along, runs his great interview with his dad afterwards, by the way, conducted by the one and only Jonathan Gold. Definitely go check that out, because his dad was he's kind of shocked, but his dad's clearly a very good guidance mentor figure for him right now. Athletically, his dad said he runs 80 to 90K a week, never doubles.
Not a single double.
He came off 50 hours of travel, I think, 2 or 3 days before it, like hell travel with the winter storm.
Yeah, got stuck in San Fran for like 24 hours on the way.
And then he does a performance like that. It really calls into question everything that you thought you believed in terms of performance and what actually results in running fast times.
I know. What do we think? What is it? How does this stack up to a Cam Meyer's performance from, let's say, a couple of years ago, when maybe Cam went and ran like, not that we should really compare it, but it's crazy that right now, two teenagers, one from New Zealand, one from Australia, both insanely young. Was Cam now 19?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
running it's, low it's all in the
same. It's all in the same ballpark, but this is actually way next level in terms of time. I think, yeah, I mean, Cam never came to BU and ran a mile at BU, I suppose you could put as a little asterisk. So maybe he was, you know, capable of something similar. But even then, like, it's you're not even talking about now, because now you're in the realm of if you ever run a 3:48 mile at BU, you've had a good career.
Literally.
And he's done it at 16 in his first ever indoor race.
Yeah, first time ever on an indoor track.
And now his dad, they were talking about his plans, and he's still got 2 whole years of school left.
Yeah, he's about to start, like, for US listeners, junior year, like, probably this week, but he's in the US, so he's probably skipping a couple weeks of school. But it should start, like, I don't know, either today, or like this week. Like, it's not, we're not recording Monday, or it's maybe like next Monday.
Yeah.
So he's got 2 full years left and 2 years left of world juniors.
That was a crazy
That's the other way. Because they were trying to decide, all right, now should he go run Com Games now that he has that standard? Because they were originally thinking world juniors, but they could run Com Games and then come back 2 years from now and run world juniors or something.
Yeah, the fact that his dad was considering, should he run Com Games? It's like, if you're in our world, it's like, yeah, no shit, you got to run the Com Games. But then it's
I was
like,
wondering the same thing.
But then he's like, oh, but then he's going to miss like a month of school, yada, yada, yada. His dad, like, these kids are very professional, I will say. His dad was talking about how his world junior build will be compromised because he won't get 8 weeks of European summer going into it. And then to that, I was like, okay, come on. Like, you're 16. Like, I don't think that's that big of a deal. I think you'll be fine at that age doing that. But regardless, it's just hard to wrap your head around it. And if, you know, you look at Laros and Myers and Jakob, all these other very recent teenage phenoms, they just keep getting better. Once they run these fast times at 16, it's not as if you run a fast 16. It's not like as if you're Jim Ryan and you run your fastest times when you're, I don't know, 18 or whatever. It's like these guys keep getting better and better. And it really is crazy watching the future of the sport unfold right in front of our eyes. And I absolutely love his demeanor. He's so chill. He's the most chill guy ever. He didn't even seem fazed or tired. After the race, in the post-race interview, he was just vibing out. Just apparently he called that on the best day he could run 3:48. Like, that's what he had in his mind. So I don't know. I love it.
And what, the other thing, his training compared to Jakob's at 16 must be like the complete opposite.
Yeah, dude. And that's such another, that's a really good and interesting point, because I think a lot of people would have looked at Jakob and say, okay, well, that makes sense. This guy has been trained as a robot since he was 12 years old. Sam Ruth is not that. He obviously has really good people around him, and he has a great coach, great mentor in Sam Tanner to help him along. But this guy is really just out here doing it off 16-year-old training.
Yeah. It sounds like, well, from Sam, whenever I either like call Tanner or text him, who now is stuck training with a 3:48 16-year-old, which must also be a really good training partner, but also like every day just must be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he probably feels, this kid probably just crushes everything and feels amazing. He's only
That's pretty much what he said. He's like,
he's a 145, 800 guy.
Yeah. Just feels great and just crushes. Like, the 200s would just be like, running so fast.
I think he even has
just because he like feels good.
A good 5K. Like, I think, doesn't he even have a 13:45 5K as well or something, like pretty solid for that age?
I think you're in 13:40 a month ago or so. Yeah.
Which is like, it's funny because in any other context, like 16 years old and 3:40 for a 5K is absolutely bananas. But yeah, when you
compared to 3:48.
3:48, it's like, oh,
I want to see a 3K actually.
Surely you'd crush a 3K.
Maybe you should do one of those. They're talking about running like 4 miles in like 4 weeks while he's here. I feel like now that he's run 3:48, one of those should be a 3K.
Yeah, excited to see him go head-to-head with Cole Hawker. I mean, that's like the next step, I guess, is after running times is get in the championship races where you're not just so much better than everyone else. And I mean, Cole Hawker is the Olympic gold medalist, so he's going up against it in terms of the best competitors in the world. But it's going to be so exciting to see how it plays out for him. And yeah, wish him the best. I just hope that he can just continue to, you know, keep enjoying it.
Doing great stuff for New Zealand athletics right now as well. Mum, Dad said he's all over the news, which hopefully it's not a bad thing for him. Like, hopefully he seems to be taking it in stride. I don't think he's like feeling the pressure. The Prime Minister was really? Like, on the news with him saying something. I don't know what he was talking about, but I saw a photo of it. It's kind of funny.
I love that.
Everyone's getting behind it.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
This is a bit selfish, so apologies to you guys and everyone listening, but one of the other results from BU, which I really enjoyed watching, was Anthony Camilleri winning the 5K. And I don't think I ever really, maybe I dropped his name on the pod at some point, but he's someone who, he used to live in Boulder, and I was doing a lot of training with him for a couple months there, like October, November. Then he broke my heart and moved to Flagstaff. But he's someone that he trains really well, really smart. He's been crushing it. And so to see it actually translate into a good race result where he won the 5K, I think it was 13:12 at PB, first race of the year, really awesome. So happy for him. One thing that I thought was really cool, and the main reason I want to bring it up on the podcast, is that he tested his lactate after the 5K. And I would like to see if you guys could guess what his lactate was after the 5K. And the information that I will give you is that his max lactate that he's ever hit is around 20.
I'm going to say...
What was the time for the 5K?
13:12. It was a PB.
PB.
I'm going to say not that close to 20. Because 9. I think he would have been too tired to get it up.
I'm saying 9.
Well, you guys have fallen right into my trap because that's exactly what I thought it would be, but he tested 18:1.
I was going to say like 12 to 15 or something.
That's exactly the range that I thought would be feasible for what you could hold for a 5K, but... Yeah, he tested close to his max lactate after a 5K, which I just thought was...
I've never thought about it. No one else who's taken it.
This is us nerding out for... Well, me nerding out for a second, I guess. But I just thought that was so interesting that... Because, yeah, I had the same assumption that you guys had, that for a 5K, it would be impossible to get close to your max because it's an effort that you hold for so long. He kicked down really well as well. But I guess...
I mean, your lactate should just be going up and up and up.
Just goes up forever.
Yeah. Until you start slowing down.
But yeah, we should start lactate testing everyone after races just because it's interesting.
Assuming he took bicarb, would also make it pretty high.
But he's 20.
His 20 is also probably...
Is bicarb enhanced as well. Yeah. I just found it very interesting. And I would wonder if, I guess after an 800, you would expect your lactate to be literally max. Right?
You would.
That's like kind of the top of that curve, and then, but it doesn't maybe fall off as quick as you would think. But that explains to me why the 5K is so painful as well. On the other hand, because you feasibly, you know, within 800 or 1K, your lactate is probably already pretty high, like above threshold, and then you have to hold that for another 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, no wonder it feels so bad.
So, yeah, that's it. That was BU. That was not just BU. There's so much other stuff that we could talk about, but I think we're going to move on to Milrose because, as you guys know, these two boys were out there doing their thing. So we have a lot to talk about from that. First off, how did it just feel for both of you guys to be back in New York, slightly different weather? I think recently we've been spoiled with good weather at past Milroses. But this was not the case this time, huh?
Ollie?
No,
fucking
shit.
Freezing.
So cold.
Yeah. Had to run over the snowbanks?
Well, it was clear mostly. It was just freezing. Like the windshield was pretty tough. And I remember when we got in, you could just see all the packing, like the pile of snow from the week before, the amount of snow they've gotten into New York. It's been a long time since New York's seen that much snow and seen it being that cold. So it was a... new experience. Geordi and I and a lot of the others didn't bring like winter jackets. So shout out to Declan and On for bringing in the jackets because we were going to freeze to death if we didn't have something to walk around in. So appreciate that from them. But it was pretty cold.
Yeah, Declan really came through for us there. But it was probably fortunate we were there a week after the actual storm. So at least things were clear to run. Because we actually did everything outside. No treadmill running took place.
How is that just because they were broken?
Partly, yes.
Because wasn't the temperature in the teens
Yeah, that was like feels like minus 20 Celsius on like Sunday morning.
Yeah, it was cold
because of the wind chill. It was insane.
Jason was making us avoid the gym because a certain someone was coughing up a lung in the gym constantly.
That's true, actually.
So he said, don't go in there and get sick. Just run outside. So we avoided the gym area. Yara didn't. Yara ran inside, but everyone else.
Well, that might explain it because Yara's not at practice, actually.
Oh, really?
Maybe that, that would actually be crazy. That would actually be, I didn't even think about that. We all did our little 10-minute shakeout outside except Yara because he thought it was too cold. But maybe that was a mistake.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty, it felt kind of like a quick in and out trip. Got there like pretty late Friday night, got some noodles. Some late night noodles and then a pre-meet Saturday, middle of the day, pretty standard. That was like the main event.
Well, what was not standard about it? Can we talk about those outfits, guys? Who decided, is that Robert Falcon?
Robert Falcon.
Yeah.
Who do you think, Morgan?
Made for some interesting pictures.
Tom was loving it.
I could see a lot.
I was rooming with Robert and Robert's like, you're wearing this, right? And I was like, yeah, right. And then Sinclair Johnson said, that's an interesting outfit.
Yeah.
So awesome. We're walking to the threshold, and I was like, "Well, you know, it's getting to people's heads. That might be a good sign." But yeah, it was funny.
Got it was people talking.
Seen the pictures though, I thought it was going to look a lot worse.
The nipples. You guys were showing nipples a lot more up close. See, yeah. At least the one I was wearing was like a loose one with like colors on it, whereas theirs was like a proper skin tight undershirt that
quite see through.
Yeah. Yeah, basically see-through and very tight over the nipples.
Very tight over the nipples, yeah.
Quite the look.
Yeah.
Robert was getting very excited at pre-meet too.
Yeah, he was running everything pretty quick, so he was getting very keen.
Hey, everyone has the different things that get them excited, ready to race.
Pre-meet's always fun at Millrose, actually. Lots of people there.
Yeah.
And like first banked strides of the year.
Oh, it always feels good, doesn't it?
It is fun.
You're like, wow, this track is faster than anything else I've run on for like the last like 8 months.
I think it feels so much better than BU. I mean, I haven't run a BU in 2 years, but
I think it's a better track as well. I felt awkward a little bit, but I think it's just because we don't run a lot on the banked 200 meter. So you just got to adjust a little bit, but it looked pretty good. So
yeah. And then a nice on dinner Saturday night.
Yeah. Mediterranean.
In the basement of this place. Like two floors down. It was like fully underground.
In the
that
bunker.
Was quite cool. Yeah, in a bunker.
It was like a mafia bunker.
It really was. But that was nice of On. And then Sunday. Then it was just race day already.
Then it was race, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, me and Ollie got a coffee at La Cabra, the standard
we did.
Jordan Donnelly spot. Quite good coffee. Actually, really good coffee.
And we got seat too. That was pretty cool.
Especially after a month in Scottsdale without the espresso machine.
Yeah,
it was well needed, which is very nice to be back here with good coffee, actually.
Yeah, it is a game changer.
Fair enough. Yeah, race day, just like that. I do have a few questions about race day. I think we can start to kind of go through it. Well, one thing that was maybe slightly different with this Millrose is that the meet was a bit later in the day. It was, I believe, 4 to 6. You almost raced at 6 p.m., right, Ollie?
Yeah.
Just in time.
I swear it's normally earlier than that.
It's normally,
like,
I think,
2 to 4 or 1 to 3 or something.
I was told that it's always been this time, but the previous year, because of the Super Bowl, they moved it up.
Is that why that was?
I feel like it's always a more early one because I always have memories of it feeling like a slightly, like not a super rushed morning, but a slightly rushed morning.
I definitely remember that.
So
more so than this time.
Maybe we're getting gaslit though. Maybe it is. I don't know. I don't know what to believe now. We'll have to go through the record books.
Let's get through the history.
Yeah. But I guess pre-meet, everything's a good vibe. But one thing that was very interesting this year pertaining to the men's 2 mile was that Grant pulled out. And I believe you guys found out 2 to 3 hours before the race. Is that correct?
Yeah. We found out on the bus.
On the bus, you found
the track.
Out.
But I think there was chat of him not feeling that good in the day or two leading up to it.
Interesting.
So it wasn't
including physical evidence of him coughing up a lung in the gym. So.
I thought that's who you might have been talking about. But for you,
the morning of, there was like potential for that to happen. And then it was just confirmed, like, on the bus over there.
What was your reaction to it? And did it change anything for you in terms of how you were going to approach the race?
I actually thought it was not going to have as big impact as it probably did.
I think it had a very big impact.
Yeah. And I probably thought it wasn't going to. I thought it would have some, but I think there was just enough, what I thought was enough chat from those guys about the world record that, yeah, maybe it turns out, like, Cole's been talking about the world record for like 2 months, but maybe it turned out he just meant like, I'm going to sit on Grant for the world record.
Yeah, there's a difference there.
Yeah. He just didn't mention that part.
Yeah.
So unless he decided like 2 laps in not to go for it, who knows?
Did you think that Cole would potentially be the one to chase the world record behind a pacemaker?
I thought if like the pacemaker went like close to 2K, then Cole was not afraid to take it on last year a little bit. And he's...
Yeah, but he only went to the front for 200 to 400 meters last year, right?
Something like that. Yeah. Like 600 to go or something. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I didn't give it too much thought because either way, I wasn't going to do it. So...
Didn't change the race plan.
Yeah. It ended up having a bigger impact than I probably thought. Which is probably a lot of respect to Grant for having that bigger impact on a race that he's not even fucking in.
Seriously, I mean, it's a very scary thing to take on, especially this field that was touted as, you know, the most stacked field ever. And it was. I think the idea of leading that out for almost anyone is probably the most scary thing ever if you're just purely looking at your end finishing result, because you just know that so many of these guys will be so hard to drop. And if you're leading behind the pacemaker in a fast pace, you know that you have to be able to run really, 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 really fast to be able to drop these guys. And yeah, indoor tracks, like, I guess it is a little bit easier than outdoor track, but it's still,
yeah,
especially that those paces that you would have to be running, which is under 60 second 400 meter pace, you know, which is for a long time. So really, really hard to do. And it definitely, yeah, did have a big impact on the race. Maybe we'll just go through the races in, I don't think this is exactly chronological, but slightly chronological. But first off, did either of you guys see the coffee club sign in person that was out there?
I did not.
I did not either.
No.
I'm trying to think, actually. No, maybe I did see it.
Such a good sign.
While I was doing strides, actually. I think I did. I'm pretty sure I saw it like during like the couple of strides on the track. Looking up. Yeah, legendary. Thank you to those fans. I only saw the part where it said like love Coffee Club on it.
It did say Hot Girls Love Coffee Club for anyone who's listening. That didn't get to see it. So, you know, good little...
I saw a photo at the end after the, like, on social media. I saw a photo was posted of it.
Yeah. We love our fans so much. We love you all. And we love signs. So anything like that is always absolutely electric. So thank you so much to the people that, and it makes for really good pictures, especially the picture of Colin Salami in a kind of the one that made it onto No Context, the one that I saw.
Is it with the sign in the background?
Yeah, with the sign very clear in the background. So yeah, absolutely so loved it. But going through the races, we had the women's 3K, which I think was, I think everyone knew that it was going to be assault on the NCAA record, and that's what it ended up being, a battle between Doris and Jane how do you say her last name? Hedengren?
I think you nailed it.
Hedengren. she's a freshman. Doris is not a freshman, a fifth in the world in the steeplechase, so very impressive to see Jane get after it and try to make the race, but yeah, Doris just...
She looks so good.
That next level.
Who actually ended up second?
Hannah Nuttall.
Oh yeah, it was.
Yeah, she's been coming on really well, like as a pro. Very, very impressive run by her. Very fast time. But Doris ended up 8:31. New collegiate record. I absolutely love it when you see someone rolling on the floor after a race. If it goes well. If it's not a good race, you don't love to see that. But when they crush it and you know they've given it everything. Got some good pictures because shout out to manager Tom Wang was standing right next to, I don't know if you guys saw him in person, he was in prime location right next to the finish line.
He literally was. Yeah. Got a fist bump on the way to the track.
So He got some.
He's like, Tom, how'd you get radio?
Yeah, I don't know how he did, but yeah, that was an awesome race. Just a real, just getting after it, which we love to see. And yeah, good fireworks at the end. The men's 800. This was, I think,
was this one that was supposed to have Hoey?
No, he was.
What did he drop out of?
He was meant to be in the mile.
Fuck, I couldn't.
But who did drop out of this was, is it Declan? The really good Irish guy.
Kian McPhillips.
Yes. Sorry, Declan. I just went for like a random Irish
name. Irish name.
I think I might be wrong. Actually, maybe I'm just totally wrong on this, but I thought he was meant to be racing it.
It sounds right.
And
so many people from Boston actually dropped out of Milrose.
Yeah.
They all
crazy.
Probably got that same like virus that I swear goes around these East Coast meets every single year.
Every single year.
Ollie knows
time.
About it.
Yeah.
So.
Dude, I have that in print just to go back 4 years. I have that imprinted in my mind after Ollie won Milrose. And just, you guys listening, you had to be there. He was so sick. Didn't come out of his room for, I think, like 3 or 4 days. Played Halo. You were playing Halo Infinite on the TV in Florida. And then you were suddenly like just completely better and just went straight back to crushing it.
It was tough. Al got it that year and Al got it again this year.
Oh, this sucks.
Tough.
Yeah, real tough to see.
Don't go to these good meets. It's not worth it.
Don't drink out of the cup.
Well, you just got to race once. If you're going to race once, just go to the meet and then cop the sickness. But hopefully you run well. So
true. True. But this was so Donovan Brazier, he raced last week at Boston and didn't do quite as, in the 600, I think it was, and didn't do quite as well as he wanted. So you could tell that he was actively being a bit more aggressive in this 800. And he had a big battle in his hands. He had a Towie, crazy Spaniard. Out there, 142 men battling, trying to take it to him. But then, out of nowhere, our favorite deli meat base nickname, Colin Salami, comes through for just probably it's got to be the biggest win of his career, winning the Milrose 800, 144, breaking. I'm pretty shocked that this is such an old collegiate record. I think it's 37 years or something crazy like that. 144 indoors and doing it like that, closing.
Absolutely,
I think
insane.
He closed in 26, just looking real strong. That was to me probably the biggest, I want to say, like surprise, like amazing performance of the meet. It was pretty bananas to see it unfold.
Massive to see that from the guy who just came 16th at NCAA Cross
strength
2 months ago.
Flagstaff
less
strength.
About 2 months ago. Is insane. Some crazy range, looking very, and a nice turnaround from, they went to somewhere like Liberty, either last week or 2 weeks ago. And he had like pretty disappointing mile, I think, like that he was disappointed in. And to show up at Milrose like less than 2 weeks later and run like that, it was impressive turnaround to see. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe he's just an 800 runner.
I think he is.
That can somehow run 10K cross country.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense, but...
Yeah, he went out like right at the back.
Got the tools for it.
Or maybe just like kind of got dropped off the line, as a lot of distance runners do, and then just came home so strong.
Yeah, I mean, when you're racing, I don't know, a bunch of those guys can probably split 45 flat 400s. I don't know what he can split, but it's probably not quite that fast, so...
He's always running 400s.
Yeah,
in the dome.
He's trying. He's getting there.
Not the school you would expect to have the 800 meter collegiate record in NAU.
Don't worry, they're gonna have all the records when they're done with it. Ollie, you had one of your athletes in this race. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think like after the 600, obviously Milrose is always an interesting one where you can see how it goes. But my boy Donovan was jogging around pre-meet flame one on the bank. And I remember Ritz mentioning that to me, obviously, because I'm his coach. That's probably not the best warm-up to do, to just jog around an indoor track on the bank, not actually, like, run it. But Donovan looked pretty good. I'd say that, like, it's always funny because these indoor races, like, are a good indicator sometimes when it comes to the rest of the season. But then other times, it's just, like, some people are more primed up than others. So. The greatest thing for me about it is to see Donovan just racing more. And after that sick win at USA, it's good to see him back and competing regularly, you know. But it was pretty cool for Salamander to come through and win that. And I mean, to beat Bryce and Donovan, that's a pretty big scalp, the college kid. So should give him a lot of confidence. And Donovan will be back, and I'm sure he'll have a lot more fly fishing under his belt, so he'll be running.
Yeah, maybe scheduling a few more fly fishing days on his final surge, and then he'll be primed by USAs. Will you have him running?
Already done.
Is he running USAs? Do you have that on his calendar?
At the moment I do, but depending on how he feels, I mean, who knows if he's got the illness. But
fingers crossed he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of fly fishing sessions is just as good as USA indoors. So we'll see what he wants to pick.
I think that's 90% of his aerobic conditioning is the fishing.
Standing for 4 hours?
Yeah.
That's really hard to do.
Swinging the arm. Also. Based on him, is only running like 30 miles a week.
Yeah.
The rest of the mileage is fishing.
And it seems to be working, so keep it up. Thank you, Coach, for that that good review. It is very, very, it does make us all very happy just to see him out there competing.
It does.
So, yeah, we love to see that. So on to the 2 mile, which we've obviously already talked about a bunch. But, yeah, it was going to be touted as an assault on the world record, which was set in this meet 2 years ago. George and I know that very well because we were behind it. George a bit closer to it than I was. But that was I have memories of that race being very painful, trying to run that pace for as long as you can. Josh Kerr looked pretty good that day. But yeah, as soon as Grant was no longer in the race, you know, when I saw that, I was like, well, this is good for George. I was like, this could be, not that you couldn't run fast, but it's just like, well, now it becomes more of a kicker's race. And we all know that George has an amazing kick. So I was but there's still so many bodies. But I was anticipating it to be, yeah, I thought that maybe someone else would do a, probably not as good as Grant, but like make it fast still. But then
An attempt
at it. But then that is not what happened. Cole did. Dude, Cole's gotten really good at doing this, actually.
This is now his like, I think he's just going to play this card forever.
Dude, his boss move of going behind the pacemaker and then slowing it down in a race that everyone expects to be a fast race.
Or even not even a paced race. He was just like, I feel like USA's was maybe the best example.
He led the whole thing.
He led like, what's a 5K? 12 and a half laps.
Mm-hmm.
He led like 11 laps, got passed for a lap, and then just came back around.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's just going to do that forever. He's got that on lock.
Yeah. Well, the thing, I could be wrong on this, but I think the first 800K was still pretty quick. I think maybe first 800, maybe even 600. I don't know. But then it was really in the middle where there was a 62 or 63, which is not that slow, but compared to running 60
if the pace
the
is
way,
59 points, 63 is pretty far away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the field bunched up. Like everyone was obviously, it was a big field, especially compared to the mile, which was a tiny field comparatively, but it was a very elite field. So everyone was right there. Lots of bodies.
Yeah. No, it's a weird one where on paper, it looks like way crazier than it ends up being on the track for some reason, like the field. Maybe that's just like any race.
I think most, especially in January.
Because just not every single one of those people can have the day that on paper.
Their PB day.
Yeah, they can have maybe. And then, yeah, then you take out Grant and you end up with a different race as it showed. So, I don't know. We got what we expected from Josh. He wasn't going to go out and try break his own world record for everyone else. Mm-hmm. That made sense. And, yeah.
I thought you seemed like you were, at the start, like very switched on, like in terms of like you position yourself very well at the beginning.
I think the splits, I was in like sixth or seventh at the first split at like 400, which is an all right place to be. And yeah, well, in summary, I came fifth, ran at 808, and it's real fucking frustrating. Yeah, disappointing, and need to, I don't know, would like to, would do it differently if I could do it again.
What would that look like?
That's a good question. It felt terrible was part of the issue, but maybe not the whole issue. Just never got comfortable in the middle of the race. And because it was so slow, because it slowed up in the middle, obviously a lot of people just go around on the outside because it's easy to do at that pace, or it gets a lot easier to do rather than when you're running 59 or 60. And I just couldn't run close enough to the person in front of me while being relaxed. So, it never got that hard compared to, like you said, 2 years ago. That 8:05 was like maybe one of the harder efforts I've ever put on the track.
Yeah, like you felt like you were able to like effectively ride that line like the whole way.
Yeah, like that was fucking hard, I remember. I remember finishing that race and be like, holy shit, that was so tough. And this year, just didn't have that feeling. And had what I felt like was a pretty mediocre last 400, and what ended up being the fastest 400 in the race, which just makes it look even worse. Just feel like I let myself down in that kind of opportunity. Feel like I let some fans down in that kind of situation. And, you know, Textbook George is obviously not going to happen every single time. That's what makes it exciting. But for it to be, you know, that far away from what it should be is, it's a bummer for everyone. It's a bummer for the race. It's a bummer for, you know, all the Coffee Club fans that came out. So, it should have been a good fight with Cole up there. And I think it showed that, Parker and Josh, they put up a good fight at the end, but, you know, no one's really taking Cole to the line, in that race. And maybe I feel like I was one of the guys that probably that should have been able to do that, and just didn't make it happen. So,
well, I think you're being a bit hard on yourself. I think you still race pretty well. You came fifth in a pretty good field. Obviously, yeah. You'd want to. I knew that once Parker and those guys started going, that they were going to run the last. It's going to be really fast from when those guys. Well, I guess Parker only went to the front with like 300. 400 to go. Like I'm getting a bit confused.
Like
it wasn't that early, I guess, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. But I think when the races run like that, if you're not in contact, it's just a hard race with a lot of bodies and a lot of people that we know can run really, really fast. And I think a lot of the people in that field are really, really fucking good. So especially like in terms of specifically performances on the world stage at championship meet at races. So
yeah.
The field, everyone that field, like even compared to like, let's say 2 years ago, have just continued to excel and accomplish great things compared to the rest of the world. So just gets more and more competitive.
I've moved on pretty quick, but I more just look at it as, you know, a missed opportunity, and that's fine. Like, that didn't go how I wanted, but it's not gonna be a difference maker for the year, really. And, you know, we did things a bit differently, obviously, like a month in Scottsdale before Melrose is not something we've done before. Normally we'd have, like the last couple of years, we've raced a BU 5K before Melrose, so like got in a really hard effort. Yeah, what is normally 2 weeks out from Melrose has been like on the calendar often and wasn't this year. And you know, a bunch of things that maybe had an impact and maybe didn't. And some a later start to the track work is kind of something that was a bit different as well. But all in all, is what it is.
Yeah. Just a quick rundown, some of the other performances. Kai ran great. Fourth place. I mean, he was probably wanted to. I mean, everyone wants to win that race, so I'm not going to say Maybe he was disappointed as well. Took the Australian record. So That was my only record, I think. So rip Morgan, but great run from Kai, crushing it. It looked really strong when he made his move around the field because he was like right at the back early on. Cole, you know, almost surprisingly, this is one of the biggest wins of Cole's career, aside from his championship, like pure like USA's World's Olympics. He surprisingly, it was his first, I think surprisingly, was his first Milrose because he's competed at a lot of them and we know how good he is. And I don't think he's ever won a Diamond League. He didn't win a Grand Slam. So kind of crazily, like this is like, yeah, such a really big win for someone who's so accomplished. Yeah, at the end, he won it. I mean, if you look on paper, it's like not convincing, but like in the video, it's like he kind of convincingly like beat Kerr in the end, and Parker put up a really good fight, which we kind of knew like he was going to be pretty dangerous, just considering how he's already done so well and like he's lost three races, I guess, going if you go all the way back to Fifth Ave. Like he's been absolutely crushing it.
The guys from World Cross, actually across the board, seem to run pretty good.
Good little tune-up. Parker, good little rust buster.
Parker Kai, like Nico, obviously.
Yeah.
This guy's gotten a hard Tallahassee effort. Came to Milrose ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, I even thought like people like Graham Blanks ran really well. I thought Cooper did really well. Like, I think a lot of people did really, really well. It's just such a absolutely bonkers field. So that's how it goes sometimes. But I think it did.
Drew Hunter had a solid one. Yeah. 8:10.
Like, I thought it was... It's a hard distance to race, honestly. I mean, especially with that many good people on an indoor track, it's really hard and just super competitive. So I think a lot of people showed that they're in a really good spot for this time of year. So, but yeah, obviously lots more to come as we go forwards. But moving on to the miles, the final two races of a big day, a great day of track and field. I was surprised that this was Nikki's first time winning as well, because they have tried to win this one many times, but it was good. It was a really, really good race on the women's side, because it was, I mean,
maybe also impacted by Al dropping out.
I don't
know if there was any chat of their going for some kind of record, but I feel like she always has an impact on those races as such a strong front runner.
And Sinclair took it on, but it wasn't fast. It wasn't record fast, even though it actually in the end came close. Like,
they did run fast in the end.
They were able to close so fast. But what it did result in was a very exciting finish featuring Nikki. And good to see Jess Hull after, you know, a bit of a off race for her in Boston, I think looking very, very good again. But Nikki was just able to get that dub, closing in 60 seconds for the last 400. Really, really impressive. I don't know. What did you guys make of it?
Ollie, did you watch it trackside?
Yeah, it was quite funny, actually. I was doing strides and Nikki, they came up to me and said, "Ollie, you've won this race before. How do you win?"
Give us some good advice.
Which was funny from them. Huh?
You must have given some good advice.
I pretty much said have fun with it, and kind of like I said that for the women's races, they always crush and always super competitive and really fun race. So Nikki's, they've never shied away from that sort of stuff. So
you didn't
kind of said go for it. And,
you didn't tell them to
sit on Josh Kerr
to our class field.
I forgot to mention that. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. But yeah, it was pretty cool to see them win. After that, obviously, we'd love to see Jess win that because it would have been pretty sick. But she ran really, really well, and it was a cool race to watch.
Actually, I think whoever won that race is going to be a new winner. No one that had won the race before was in the race, which is probably kind of rare.
Which is rare. Yeah, at the moment. But so it was pretty sick. It's pretty sick to watch that close as well. So yeah.
And
following that up,
we had our own
Through the Flames.
Oliver Holt. Yeah. How was the, it's just the miles get to run through the flames, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, on the stream, I don't think they really showed, I don't know if it was an ad break.
They go to ads.
I think they showed the whole women's one. But the men's one, unfortunately, coincided with, I believe, an ad break. So, Ollie, how was it, how was the vibes out there running through the flames?
Vibes are good. Vibes were good.
How loud was it?
Pretty loud. I mean, it was actually, it's always very honoring. That's the right word. Probably not. You always feel very privileged when you run through and you get a big cheer. So I appreciated that from
this is a home race for us.
It was, as always. It's just, to me, it's always funny. I mean, I'm not sure how big of a cheer Cole Hawker got. I'm sure it was massive. But when Yard ran through the flames, there was a rumble. It's quite loud. So he's got a huge fan base. And you never fully forget it, but you definitely get...
You take it for granted when you're around him all the time, for sure.
Yeah, you get goosebumps about it. So, like a lot of people at the Grammys, I made a wardrobe choice that I regretted.
Dude, you had a little... Your belly was...
I wore...
Your little crop top action.
That...
Unzipped, too. So there was a lot... There was stuff showing at both ends.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to give the fans what they want. No, it was a bad choice. It was extremely uncomfortable. It was like wearing tight knitted sweater because of the material was not comfortable. And it definitely wasn't a thing I should have worn for that race. I should have worn the jersey, but just the patterning and the style of the kit, it looked cool. So I thought I'd give it a shot, but I should have just worn the jersey and been in a much more comfortable thing because it definitely caused me to stress out during the race immediately. Even not in the first stride, it just didn't feel natural for me. I should have gone back to the bodysuit or the singlet. But I mean, I have similar notes to how George felt in his 2 mile. I felt pretty good going into pre-meet. Everything was pretty good. I mean, my low goal was to run under 350. That was something that I really wanted to do, and my training had kind of shown that that was possible, and things have been going really well. So going to the race, like start the race, my legs felt heavy. It felt like I had been training like through the race. My legs felt really heavy. I didn't feel very comfortable at all, particularly my upper body area. I felt pretty all over the place, and similar to what George mentioned, I was trying to get behind Hobbs, but I just couldn't get close enough to him. I just wasn't comfortable enough to get into that gap, and just struggled at the end and finished, and it felt really hard, but I recovered so quickly that I realized that, you know, I probably maybe overstressed myself a little bit, and I could have, you know, I'd love to run that race again and do it differently, but you get one opportunity for that, and unfortunately didn't go that well for me. But on a positive note, like I looked at my splits and I was on 3:48 pace until 400 to go. So it's not that I wasn't capable of it. I think I just didn't execute a race or put myself in a position to complete that race the way I know I can. And it's not so much as me not being capable of it, it's just me not executing it correctly. And those are what, I know Milrose is such a big race, but it's my first and probably my only indoor race this year. So it's something to look at and take away from. And I also felt that I am in a really much better place than I was last year. My 3K last year was really bad, and I felt really lost and pretty down on myself about it. Considering the type of athlete I think I am, or I know I am. But for this race, I don't feel too bad. I feel, obviously, I'm very disappointed and upset, but I don't feel too negative towards it. I mean, 3:53 is not a result that's terrible. I wouldn't compare it to a 7:42, but I do know that if I am running really uncomfortable and I'm dealing with all those issues and I'm not even really engaged mentally in the race and I'm on 3:48 pace for most of the race, it shows that I'm capable. Even when I'm not feeling good, I just have to put, like we always say, put those pieces together. So I'm taking that as a positive. You know, my body was a bit banged up after the race on my right side. So I'm going to have to get treatment of it when I'm here. But I felt like I'm definitely in a really good place fitness-wise, and I know I can race really well, but a few things I got to work on, which I spoke to with Dayton, is wardrobe choice, as well as kind of just hopefully going into a race and the legs feeling like they're under me and feeling good, because through Scottsdale, felt incredible through training and felt pretty confident about where my body was. I think it just was one of those days, unfortunately. But shout out to Cameron Miners, taking the dub, being an Aussie, watching that go through is really something special. And Cam is a really genuinely down-to-earth bloke. He loves the sport. He knows everything. He knows all the stats. He's a fan of it as well. So I had breakfast with him and Lyndon after the race, and it was great to spend some time with him. And he's just very well level-headed and excited for what's to come. And it was sad to not see him in that relay, but also really, really encouraging to see him do so well after that. So that was pretty amazing. Yared ran great, I thought. Just when you're making those moves, it's very hard to get around people. And he had to make another move to get around Hobbs, because Hobbs made a move earlier on with 100 to go to get around Cam. So I think Yard ran that race really well. And I know, obviously, you want to win, but he's won it 3 times. Losing it isn't a bad thing. It's good motivation. And I think he raced it pretty well. Just tactically, you know, sometimes you get outplayed and outclassed, as some people say. But
instead,
I think he ran incredibly well to counter Hobbs. And if he had a bit more time, he probably would have been able to come up to Cam. And
I want to say on that, I think actually Yared tactically ran it really well. Like, I think,
yeah,
I don't know. I guess you can look at it different ways, but I think Cam, dude, I mean, Cam just, he's in crazy shape right now.
He just put together like
momentum.
Two of the craziest weeks, indoors that has maybe been seen for a long time.
And I think something that is significant about this race, I guess almost similar to the 2 mile, is that so Josh Hoey was supposed to be in this race and he was supposed to be chasing the world record. That was the word on the street. That's what, you know, everyone heard about. And then he pulled out after the 800 at New Balance for whatever reason. And so that obviously that changes the dynamic of the race so much because, yeah, he was, you know, it's funny because I was going for a run with Yard and we were talking about tactics and he was like, yeah, having Hoey in this race is perfect for me because I can then just sit on him and try to outclass him at the end. But when Hoey pulled out, I think maybe a lot of people thought that Yard would then be the one to try and, you know, win it from the front because that's how he's done it the last 2 years and that's how he set the world record last year. But I think he was actually really smart in knowing that, respecting the form that a few of those other guys brought into the race. And I think, you know, he had a good awareness of the shape that they were in. And so to see him able to race so well, not trying to do it from the front, but, you know, just really racing it. Yeah, Cam Myers got away from him at the end. And Cam Myers ran he ran a perfect race. If you look at his splits, he was going to be very, very hard to beat, like the way he was able to close it down and just be so strong from the front. But yeah, I give a lot of credit to Yared for how he was able to do that race. Because if you know, Yared's one of the best milers ever, like literally. But if there was any chink in his armor, it's been those slower races. And not that this was a super slow race. It was, I think, a 3:47 race. But it was a tactical race compared to maybe some other years. So I think he did really well in that style of race. And I think that bodes really well for him for this year, if that makes sense. So yeah. And Hobbs, I think Hobbs was maybe a bit of a surprise for a lot of people because he looks so damn good in the 2K. So he's, you know, expectations are probably so high on him. And he still ran really, really well, but maybe not quite the A++ race from a week ago.
Yeah. In his interview, it sounds like he
had like a coughing
in the last lap or something.
Yeah, so that could definitely affect you. One of the crazy performance was Nico Young. I think we were talking about that before, maybe off camera.
Pretty damn good.
Running, has he run faster than his
pretty close to his conversion? No, but he's getting close. I think his conversion is still 3:47, and put together 348
every one day
at Milrose. So honestly, it's probably possible.
Yeah. So I mean, for him, especially because I know that he was very disappointed with how he did at World Cross. I mean, you know, so to be able to just bounce back like that, really impressive. So I mean, it was a really, really impressive race. And yeah, I wouldn't be too hard on yourself, Ollie. I think, yeah, it's still so early in the year and the training, all these pieces are just coming together. And, you know, I think we're slightly, the three of us, that is, we're slightly older, maybe hopefully slightly wiser athletes now. And yeah, we've been through the cycle enough times that we know that Milrose is so, it's so awesome. Love Milrose, such a good event, but you know, it's a whole year of racing ahead. And I think because there's so much anticipation going into Milrose, it can feel like the biggest thing in the world. But I think, yeah, you know, there's a whole big year ahead and so many other things that you want to go out there and achieve. And I definitely do believe that sometimes not running your best race earlier in the year can really lead to even better performances later in the year, if that makes sense. So I think we just got to continue training, doing your thing, and it's going to be very exciting to see what the year brings. I'm going to say us, the three of us. So, yeah, that was Milrose. Is there anything of note that we didn't cover? I mean, I think we didn't mention the 600, I guess, Cooper running.
Gnaus.
Yeah, I wasn't going to try to say it. Under 20 record, but I mean, yeah, he's in that place where it's like, yeah, I expect him to break the under 20 world record every single time he runs now.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah. But honestly, I think, yeah, it was another great Milrose in the books. And yeah.
Yeah, continues to be a pretty epic occasion.
Yeah.
Sold out meet, I think. Tickets were like properly expensive for a track meet.
I think that's like the main meet I think it's the only meet in America probably. Well, I guess maybe Eugene, sometimes the tickets are expensive there. But it's the only meet
crazy.
That does it successfully. Pulls it off, yeah. Gets the atmosphere and the vibe, and yeah, it's always...
You know what makes you feel old? Because I was talking to Cam, and obviously when you win that, you get on the trophy, and it's a pretty cool experience. And I said, Cam, you know you're old when you look up and your highlight from when they call your name out is 2022 mile champion, it's 2026, and you're racing a 19-year-old. You're like, shit, I'm old.
But, bro, I was thinking about
that. You never think you get there, and then you do, and you're like, fuck.
I think I was second in the 3K in Milrose in 2019. That's 7 years ago. Sheesh.
7 years?
Sheesh.
Yeah.
Time for us to move on, I guess.
Yeah. But it's very humbling, but also very exciting, because I feel personally, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but longevity in the sport is very hard. And to have some longevity with it is a pretty cool thing, particularly when you're hopefully going to be running quicker than you have before. So, yeah, but I just thought it was funny when I talked to Cam. I was like, yeah, you won 2026. I won 4 years ago. And
time flies.
Yeah, that's like a college career, you know? So, yeah, but it's cool. Hopefully be back. Be nice to be back at Milrose Games, but it's a good indication for where to go and what to improve and how to get excited for the next races. So
yeah. I love that. Well, yeah. Anything else, George, on Milrose?
I think that was a pretty good wrap. We know Ollie has to go do a nice big long run around the streets of Sydney. Ollie, wait, have you ever ordered a magic down there?
Have I ordered a magic?
Yeah. Do you know what that is?
No, I haven't.
Do you know what a magic is? You guys not heard about this, like...
Is it a new thing or an
old
thing?
Some, like, Melbourne coffee thing. I think it's, like, reasonably new. Melbourne, but it's, like, the most, like, snobby-looking coffee order I've seen in my life.
What is it?
You should go order one, Ollie.
I don't know. I'll get looked at.
He'd probably get bashed trying to order that in the Shire. Yeah. It's like, dude, get out of here.
In the Shire, probably.
Well, it's like a three-quarter flat white, but with ristretto shots instead of normal espresso. It's something just like
so pretentious, bro.
It's like the most Melbourne pretentious thing I've ever heard. So you should go order one.
It's a very Melbourne thing. I mean, I walked up this morning at now 8 o'clock here. I walked up at like 6 a.m. grabbed a coffee, walked the dog back. So I'm pretty jet lagged right now, so I'm trying to get back into routine, but hopefully be back in 10 days with my visa in hand.
That's
which
the
will
goal.
Be very exciting.
That would be awesome if that can happen.
Fingers crossed for you.
Yeah.
Let us know how a magic order goes. I want to hear about it.
Just for me.
I'll buy your coffee if you want one.
My dad order it. It'll be funny to see my dad order it.
Love to see that.
He shouts out the pod. He's got blonde hair at the moment. His hair looks pretty good, actually.
He's got a lovely
hair. He looks like any Bond villain. The blonde Bond villain. He looks like that. So.
Shout out to
Greg. Off for a long run this morning.
Yeah, well, you go enjoy that. Go crush it. And to everyone who's made it this far, thank you guys so much for listening. This has been episode 217 of the Coffee Club Podcast, and we look forward to seeing you guys all again next week. See ya.
My hair looks pretty bad.
I think it looks good.
CoffeeClubPod.com.